You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hello and welcome to Talk Spooky to Me, the Ghost Story Guys mail show. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestall.
And this is our opportunity to hear from you, our audience. Paul, my friend, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir. I seem to be over the strange plague that I was infected with, and I'm almost back to normal.
Thank God for that. Yeah, that was a real bastard.
I think I've caught up on about 9 years sleep.
You got more sleep in the last 2 weeks than you had in the previous 9 years, yeah.
It's drinking all that rat's blood.
Or I guess the rat poison that is Paul's blood.
Yeah, 100% true story. One of many that I forget about. I think I'm turning into some kind of WWE wrestler there. I've got some kind of PTSD with some of these events in my life.
It's funny you say that because that is sort of my go-to comparison is when I listen to the podcast by the wrestler Roddy Piper, because that man had so many stories, but he could not remember them unless someone specifically prompted him. So someone would say something like bear, and he'd go, "Oh yeah, I wrestled a bear once." But he had to be prompted with that exact combination of words in order to remember the story. So I can only imagine what horrors are locked away in that beautiful skull of yours.
Yeah, if you mention animal attacks, cows, rats. Trapped up a rocket by a stray dog as a child, which was hilariously terrifying. You know, these are great memories.
Well, they've turned you into the man you are today, which makes them great by by extension, I guess, by association. Just the right blend of trauma to turn you into a podcaster and not a serial killer, which is a thinner line than you might imagine.
Yeah, very, very, very Jekyll and Hyde, ironically.
Yes, ironically indeed. We actually just watched that, you and I. We watched the rebirth, I guess, of Hammer Horror. Joe Stevenson, he's actually one of your countrymen. He's a Sheffield guy, the director, made Dr. Jekyll with Susie Izzard. And yeah, it's not bad, man.
Yep, it's one of those. I think there is some baggage around Susie. Obviously, I've known Susie a long time as a professional artiste over here. One of my favourite stand-ups, ironically, put themselves up to be one of Sheffield MPs.
I didn't know that.
Recently, last year. Didn't get the nomination, but did stand, and I've had a long-standing interest in politics and Labour particularly. So it was quite interesting that they chose Sheffield to try and get a seat. So they may return to the political scene in future. So, it was a strange connection. So I'm not sure if that's what linked them together. But, it's nice to see Hammer, because there's been a couple of sort of stalled attempts to relaunch Hammer over the last sort of 10-15 years, so it's good that it's finally tried something without doing the normal, oh, it's another Dracula or it's another Frankenstein or whatever. They've actually gone to one that it's one of those horror stories that it's been done two or three times, but it's to say it's one of the classic. If you were to say that there are, I don't know, if you were going to say there are five classic horror stories in literature that predates 1900, then Jekyll and Hyde has to be one of them. The last attempt I can really remember of somebody having a proper go at it was strangely enough, another Hammer film from the early 70s, which was Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, which was interesting, but I think it was in that Hammer period where they were more bothered about the amount of flesh on show than the script.
It's something I appreciated about this one, and we won't spend a lot of time on this, folks, but we wanted to talk about it. I think it manages to sort of circumvent some cliches that I kind of thought it was going to lean into. You know, there were just things that I thought it was going to try and do, and it doesn't. And it has a fantastically bleak ending, which I won't ruin it for you guys, but I did not see the end coming. And it reminded me, there's a film that came out last year, which is a loose adaptation of an H.P. Lovecraft short story called, the film is called Suitable Flesh. It's an adaptation of Lovecraft's, very loose adaptation of Lovecraft's Thing on the Doorstep. But it has a similar vibe in terms of how, can't say it without giving it away, but the two are not dissimilar in sort of their overarching what they do. And actually, even in terms of how they kind of take on the gender politics thing. They're both unique in that way. But yeah, it was bleak as shit. And I got to say, her performance as Nina Jekyll, like there's something that Susie Izard has been good at her entire career. You always get a sense that you're dealing with a very complex person. And that was ideal for this, because obviously Nina Jekyll is a very complex person because she's dealing with a lot of shit. You know, there is this evil inside her. But there were times where she was just sitting there thinking, which is not something you get to kind of see in movies as much these days. And I found myself uneasy because you don't know what she's thinking. There was such a great friction there between this young man who's taken care of her, who's come from rough circumstances, and yet has been inexplicably given this position. And you've got this person who should, by, you know, theoretically have absolutely no interest in interacting with this person. And you don't necessarily know what she wants from him. And again, I found that tension very effective. I didn't love the film until about three quarters of the way through, where when I saw where it was going, I was hooked. But it was just the initial moments. It was actually so uncomfortable I had to kind of look away the whole time, just because I thought, this person, there is more going on here, but I don't know what it is. So yeah, guys, we were sent a screener of Dr. Jekyll, which is why we're talking about it. But we think it's good enough that it's worth telling you guys about.
I know one of our listeners, Fiona, is a big fan of the film, actually. She's very excited.
Cool.
Who I met, strangely enough, at the Hammer screening we had here in Sheffield. So hello, Fiona.
Of course. Hello, Fiona.
Yes, very talented artist.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, she does some amazing screen prints.
Oh, very cool. Well, Dr. Jekyll will be available on streaming as of Monday, March 11th. I believe that is only in the UK currently.
So it should be.
So just before we move on, we're going to get to the mail, but we also have a guest on this episode. This is a big shaggy dog of an episode. I really love it. This is kind of why this is why we have Talk Spooky. It can be a big shaggy motherfucker. It can be whatever we want it to be. Yeah. And so we're going to answer some email, and then we're going to chat with Ruth Roper Wilde, British ghost author extraordinaire. You've heard two episodes so far based on her work, with a third and possibly more in the offing. And she will be joining us again after a little bit of email.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
So first up is from Ray, who says, interesting discussion about tunnels. Not woo, but the Williamson tunnels in Liverpool continue to reveal secrets. Dug literally for the sake of it, so people would have some sort of employment. Take a look into it. It's an interesting place to visit. And that's quite odd, because yesterday I was wandering around the home prior to doing an interview about a mystery. And there was a segment on BBC about the Williamson tunnels.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's like an indoor sort of cathedral. They're not really sure why it was built. They think it was built as philanthropy, as Ray mentions, to give people employment and training. But it's this incredible sort of Victorian internal cathedral where you basically walk in off the streets, down a corridor, down into some steps, and then this enormous space opens up. Mad.
That's fascinating, Ray. We were kidding around, but I guess there aren't, in fact, tunnels built for reasons of philanthropy.
More of that. Let's all make more tunnels through philanthropy.
Telling you, we'll get down to hell eventually, and then we'll take over. Next up is from Bonnie. Bonnie says, amazing podcast, guys. Love listening. Your laughs make my day. Also, the lemon meringue donut at Dough EV is my favorite, too. Funnily enough, I trained their coffee manager back when he worked with me at Locomotive Espresso on Pall Mall Street, which I helped open before London really had a specialty coffee scene going on. Anyways, just wanted to tell you both how much I love the podcast and your energies. Thanks. Well, Bonnie, as someone who frequents both those places and enjoys the coffee, thank you. Thank you. Because when I first moved here in October, I spent a while going around going, where the fuck is the decent coffee? Because Starbucks is not really my scene. I'll go there, but it's not my first choice. And so finding both Locomotive, actually it was because of our listener Teresa that I found Locomotive. So thank you.
Our next message is from the delightful shores of Germany. Hello Brennan, hello Paul. I just wanted to quickly let you know you've got a fan in good old Germany, as I really enjoy what you both do. The overall quality, rhythm and flow of the show is just very delightful. As you might know, there are a lot of podcasts which might have interesting topics, but are just a pain in the ass to listen to. I hear you, Florian. Anyhow, thanks again. Keep up the good mood. And if you happen to visit Berlin, let me know. Beer and barbecues are on me. I love Berlin.
I have never been, but I like both beer and barbecue and Germany. I guess not both.
Schnitzel.
I like all those things. Schnitzel. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Pretzels.
I remember being in Cologne, man. Oh, God. I drank so much beer, ate so much schnitzel. It was the time of my life.
I really like Germany. I've visited several of the cities. Strangely enough, as we were talking about riots last week, and that was where I saw the German-Polish riot.
Thought they'd had enough of that.
I was a bit worried because I look neither German nor Polish, so I couldn't really mingle as I normally do on foreign shores. And so, Berlin's fabulous. I've got to know through the show who's a very talented musician called Mark Fernihoch. Spends a lot of time in Berlin because he's one of those beautiful men who is a model, a fashionista, a musician, and a lover of the Fortean. Damn him.
Don't you hate when those guys come along?
Yeah, and a jolly nice chap.
Yeah, that's always the final kick in the face. They're good looking, they're talented, and they're nice. Like, come on, fuck you. Give me something. Yeah.
Yes, he's like some kind of beautiful albatross because he spends his winters in Barcelona.
This one's from Cal on Instagram. Cal says, "Hi, I'm Cal, a long-time listener to your show. I just wanted to pop in on your Insta to let you know what I heard on your latest episode, Mysteries in the Mist. I had started the show and had to pause it to put my kid to bed. I restarted it just about a minute ago, and it was just before the 13-minute mark. Brennan was talking, and it sounded as if he had a voice-changing effect on. It was very deep and distorted, kind of reminded me of Darth Vader a bit, but slower and deeper. It only lasted for a few seconds, and the audio continued in Brennan's normal voice. It was really strange. Maybe it's just a glitch with Spotify, but I guess we can never be too sure, can we? Anyways, just wanted to share that strange little happening with you both. Have a great day/night. Sorry, I'm in North Carolina and have zero idea about the time difference between London, Ontario, and Sheffield.
5 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you and I are on the same time zone, Cal, and then, 5 hours between us and Paul.
I know my North American time zone is like the back of my hand these days.
Better than me, considering what's happened this couple times we've had Brendan on the show.
I was going to say, let's not forget, you go forward next weekend, don't you?
We do, yes. Tell me you also go forward, because otherwise it's going to fuck me right up.
No, of course we don't.
Oh, so there's going to be 4 hours between us instead of five?
Yeah, we don't go forward till the last Saturday in March, because we do it properly.
Oh, it's all going to be very confusing. Do we have any more guests coming on, we're going to be fucked. I'm going to be fucked. I'm so bad at keeping track of time.
At least we're ahead of it now. Not like last year when you rang me saying, "What are you doing?" And I'm out walking the dog. What do you think I'm doing?
Yeah.
And we ended up talking to Brandon for 5 hours because he had to wait an hour for me to turn up.
Yeah, that was the very first time we ever had him on the show. I was in Montreal at the time. Boy, it's a good thing he's a good sport.
Yes. Lovely voice, too. Don't mind listening to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good because there's going to be a lot of that to listen to soon. Wink. Can't talk about that yet.
All right, Tiger.
I don't know how I feel about that exactly, but all right.
Moving on.
They're moving on. I appreciate the heads up, Cal. Honestly, we've had a few people tell us about this. The pisser is, it's not in the file. And when, the patrons get the show on Saturday. So the main release is Tuesday. So patrons and Apple Podcast subscribers get it Saturday. So far as I know, it's not a problem for them. It's not in the actual file. But we've had a few people write in with this. I have no fucking idea what's going on. It's like people will say, your show skips and starts and kind of jumps around. I'm like, no, it doesn't. That's not the problem with the file. That's a problem with whoever the fuck is streaming it. And it's infuriating because it makes us look like dopes. But this is not something that is in the file. It is just a freaky artifact of streaming, which is fucking maddening.
Or Satanist.
Or them. Or certain other parties who we will not mention at this time.
Moving on. Next up, Sam says, "I'm adding to the flood of love for Canadian TV. Where have we started? So first, Lost Girl is in fact great. It's a fun little show and played no small part in teenage me learning to accept my own bisexuality. But, and Letterkenny, a very different show from Lost Girl. It's a comedy that takes place in rural Canada, and it's about the people of Letterkenny and their problems, per the beginning credits, and is super fucking funny. It is a little absurd and supremely heartwarming. Also, Kim's Convenience is a wholesome delight. If you or Paul ever find yourself in Ithaca, New York, I'd love to buy you a drink, coffee, and hear your stories. As always, GSG remains my fave podcast. Keep up the good work. I really appreciate y'all's art. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much.
What a beautiful name Ithaca is.
It is. It really is.
It could be almost Grecian.
Almost. Weird. As for the TV thing, I cannot get into Letterkenny to save my life. But you're right, Kim's Convenience is a sweet show. I haven't watched a lot of it, but it is a cute show. And I think that might be where Simu Liu got his start. Am I right in that? The star of Shang-Chi? I think he got his start in Kim's Convenience.
Asking me about Canadian television is like asking Nick Pope about British UFO files.
That's fair. Yes, he was. Simu Liu did get his start in Kim's Convenience. So we are contributing to the culture. You're welcome, America. This one's from Kyla. Kyla says, I wrote once a long time ago, right around the time I first started listening to the podcast. I am one of those annoying listeners that started at the beginning of the catalog and is listening to catch up to the present day. It's taking a while, but I'm getting there. I think I'm in the year 2022 now. Lol. First, Brennan, I want to say I'm really enjoying the re-release of A Strange Little Place, available everywhere fine books are sold. My husband was able to procure a copy for me for Christmas, and I blazed right through it and enjoyed it immensely. I don't have the first book for a reference. That's good. This is much better. But I can see the addendums you've made based on what I know you've talked about in the podcast, and the extra content you've added in places makes the book very fluid and freaking fascinating. Thank you. I hope you are enjoying the second edition's run more than the first one. As someone who passes through Revelstoke on occasion, you've definitely given me more reason to take more of a pause as I go through the mountains in the future. Well, to take more of a pause about everything and everywhere, really. I also wanted to mention a book that I've come across recently that was really fascinating for a few reasons. I am wondering if either of you have read it, Will Storr versus the Supernatural. Now, the most obvious thing, any relation Brennan. I didn't grab it off the shelf at the thrift store because of the last name, but realized it later and thought that was an interesting coincidence, especially given the nature of the book. The book itself is a shotgun blast of a fascinating journey of a skeptic into the supernatural. Will Storr basically wrote this book to answer the question for himself and others, whether ghosts or the paranormal exist. The book is a fascinating read. It's very humanistic, which also aids in its readability. It's really good. So thank you for the kind words, Kyla. To the best of my knowledge, there's no relation between me and Will Storr, but I'm sure he still is a very handsome and clever gentleman, because I think it's just in the name, you know. Paul, have you read that book?
No, I have not. No. I was not aware of it.
Okay. I'd heard the name, obviously, you know. It had come up, but I haven't read it. Although, funny enough, I've mentioned before that, you know, I did the Ancestry DNA thing years ago, or a couple years ago, and because we were trying to track down my mom's Italian family and sort of plot that out. But it had the knock-on effect of revealing my dad's birth family, which I had not intended to do, but, you know, the DNA doesn't give a shit. And as it turns out, the person I'm closest to, technically a first cousin, has also written two books of paranormal shit. So they're fiction books, but still. They're actually werewolf books, if I remember correctly. But yeah, so it apparently... Again, I don't think Will Storr and I are related. I'm not actually related by blood to the Storrs. My father was, as I mentioned, was adopted. Me and this other fellow are, in fact, blood relations. He does not know this, but he also is into weird shit. So that, apparently, does run in the blood.
Yeah, being weird is genetic.
I guess you've discovered this yourself. Yeah, yeah.
We're from a different calling.
This is true.
The old gods need us.
Half in this world, half in another.
Ryan writes, hey, noticed a Boyd County, Kentucky advertisement the other day when I was listening. I was wondering where everyone was from, since this is my hometown. Have you guys ever heard of the late 1800s Ashland tragedy? It's a very interesting story, and I would love to hear the ghost story guys take.
So, Ryan, I don't know about the Ashland tragedy. I actually wrote Ryan back. But Paul does, and I'm going to get him to tell us a little bit about it. But before we do, I just want to say that when you hear ads on this show, unless it's me and Paul reading them, we don't choose those ads. So how it works generally is they're geographically targeted. So sometimes people won't hear any ads. Sometimes if they're in a market where there's a lot of sponsors, then you will hear the ads from that region. So if you're hearing something that's hyper-local to you, it's because of the whatever diabolical wizardry powers these incredible machines is just using your location data to tailor the ads. Also in that vein, if you hear something that runs completely against something that we believe in, just know that they're sneaky like that. And we can choose what we're going to have in the show and what we won't. But I actually saw Derek from Monsters Among Us was posting about this the other day that, it was Aaron Mankey from Lore. That's who it was. He was saying that, if you hear something that you think, why the hell would Aaron be supporting this? I'm not. But sometimes these guys will miscategorize their advertisements or their propaganda, basically, because they know that a lot of shows like ours do not allow political advertisements. So they'll categorize it as like, oh, it's Home and Family, and it's bloody not. And they know that. They're just doing it to get around shit like that. So if you hear something on the show and you think, this doesn't sound like something the guys would support, yeah, you're probably right. But look at it this way. One, they're sneaky bastards. And two, they're spending money for nothing because our audience is smarter than their bullshit.
Especially if it's an advertisement for Croc shoes.
Careful, I might lose about half our audience, man.
I wouldn't wear those if I had no feet.
I wouldn't wear those if I had no...
It makes sense
okay.
in my head.
Okay, no, that's fair. Let's just tell us about the Ashland tragedy before my head collapses in on itself.
Yes. So the Ashland tragedy is one of those strange cases that occurred in the late 19th century, early 20th century in the States, where you had people murdered by axe. And I think it was three kids who were hacked to death in a house, which was then set on fire. And the mother was next door and she noticed it. And so they ran in and obviously put the fire out and then discovered that these children had been hacked to death. And it ended up being like a trio of local men who'd done it. And I'm not really sure if they ever gave a reason for it. But it was one of those that it just seemed to be a really crappy situation because they got them, they put them in jail, they then had to get them out of jail to try and escape a lynch mob, and they were all sentenced to death. And then they appealed it, and one of them, I think, was given a certain period of time, but then a lynch mob got hold of him and killed him. And so the other two were taken away on a steamboat somewhere, but when they got to where they were going, there was a mob waiting for them, and a riot broke out, and several people were shot. And then the other two were ended up being sentenced to death again, and they were both hung. But I'm not aware of any reason that was ever given as to why these three kids were murdered by these people. It's just one of those balmy cases from that era. Is it the Valeska case as well? Is it very similar where you had an entire family killed and they never knew who'd done that? I mean, obviously the most famous case of this kind is obviously the Lizzie Borden case, which is probably the only one where they all thought they knew who'd done it, and she got off with it.
A feat not repeated until O.J. Simpson.
Who?
He's like a hockey player or something, I don't know.
So, yeah, another one of those weird murder cases in the late period of the 19th century. Like I've always said this, I've mentioned this on a couple of occasions, because Chad Lewis covered one on his Haunted Backroads book, I think. And there's one in Wisconsin where a woman attacked her entire family with an axe. It's just, you've really got to want to kill somebody if you're going to attack them with an axe, you know?
I wonder if it's just, there was a time when that was the most readily available weapon. I mean, there is a certain fear factor, you know, like axes are a fearsome implement. I mean, certainly, I've heard this from people who have been in, Jesus, you've been in fights. But I mean, you know, like I've never been in a fist fight with someone who had a knife, but I've heard that there is a real psychological barrier and real psychological edge, no pun intended, to using a bladed weapon like that, because there's just something about the notion of being cut that really freaks people out.
Yeah, you've really got to hit people hard with bricks.
If they've got allegedly.
Or a big bit of 2x4.
Say that again.
A big piece 2x4. Of 2x4.
Oh, that's my new favorite thing. We call it 2x4 here. 2x4.
2x4. Easy way a bit of 2x4.
Oh, even your weapons sound adorable.
Yeah, we all used to, what do they call them things? Like on, it's like a spiky ball on a chain.
A flail?
They called. And we could do with bringing them back. Medieval combat's the future.
Well, it might be in the climate wars. We'll see.
Hey, it's all right. We've just had the warmest February ever. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Let's not dwell because I need to sleep tonight.
We've had 2 days of snow this winter.
Oh, All right, moving on. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Ryan. All right, so we have two more emails left. The next one is from Chris. And Chris says, so this is a hard email, but don't worry, I wanted to thank you. You two have saved my life. January was a whole year of depression and anxiety rolled into one. Then this past week, I, like an idiot, was scammed in a Bitcoin/crypto thing to the tune of an amount of money I didn't really have. I honestly thought about calling it then and there, as early as this morning. 3 days of little sleep and anxiety will do that. But then I thought about your mental health message and was listening to episode 182, and I had to pull over while driving and just cry. But thank you a million times over. I'm not out of the dark yet, but I know I'll get there. And Chris, we know you will too, man. But we're happy you're still here with us.
Realizing it and not doing it is the first step to recovery. So well done you, mate. Keep going.
Absolutely. And don't be down on yourself with the scam thing, man. That's why scams work. They work. They fall, like, it happens. We've all been there, you know. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be crypto. Someone I know who's very, it wasn't me, but this sounds like it, my friend, you know. Yeah. My friend's got this burning. He wonders if he should go see a doctor. No, it's not that. But someone I know who is very intelligent, they got hooked in a banking scheme. They got an email from their bank saying such and such is something's wrong. We need you to log in. And it wasn't until they had already entered their damn password that they thought, wait. What's this email? What's this address? And it can happen to anyone.
Yep. Especially this day and age. People are far more sophisticated.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Not like somebody I knew who once went to buy some marijuana and bought a brick.
is this like my friend with the rash?
No. I've never bought a brick.
That's fair. That'd be expensive.
It was for them.
Oh, no.
Did you not think that it weighed really heavy? Yeah.
I just thought they packed it really well.
Hey, this is one hell of a 9-bar.
What a deal. What a steal. Say that again, but slower. What a steal. Ah, there it is. And just before we get to the last message, I want to say we had some folks weigh in on the whole lemon meringue thing, because I mentioned on a past Talk Spooky that Nikki likes to have her lemon meringue warm, which is in defiance of God and all his angels. I actually just had another lemon meringue donut today before work, and I was just sitting there looking at this thing thinking, if you heated this up, God will abandon us. There's just no reason for him to stick around if we're going to do this to his creation.
Yeah, I believe that's how the film The Blob starts, is that somebody accidentally microwaves a lemon meringue donut and it becomes sentient and starts eating the people.
Yep, and we will have deserved it.
Yeah, and Steve McQueen's not around to save us, guys. Be careful.
that's true.
So think on, people.
Although I will say our patron Elaine weighed in and said, no, you can have it hot or cold. And Elaine, I say to you, no.
We'll have none of that frivolous talk.
Out of the pool.
Time out.
Exactly. Think on your sins.
Emily writes to us, it's 1 a.m. as I'm writing this, so I'm sure I'll miss something or realise after sending this email that I could have phrased something better. But if I think about it too much, I'll never send it. I hope you forgive me for that. Judging on how you both talk about mental health stuff, I think you'll understand what I mean. So here goes. I know Christmas and the holiday season is done and gone for a while, but there's something about that time of year that I've just realised that I want to ask you about. Monsters and figures in folklore that relate to Christmas, Yule, the winter solstice, the New Year, and other winter holidays, especially in the Northern Hemisphere permitting. Krampus is probably the most well-known of the Christmas monsters, but I've got a few others that are my personal favourites. There's the Mari Clwyd, the ghostly decorated horse skeleton from Wales that you've got to fight in a carol singing competition. And if you lose, she'll come into your house and drink your beer and eat your food. At Skulls and Sheets is a light of art on Twitter, whose art focuses on the Mari Clwyd, and I've just painted a horse tooth to make her look like it myself. There's the beaky blank-faced Schnabelpecten of Austria's Rauhers Valley, which makes a ga-ga-ga sound as they inspect the cleanliness of your home and stuff any trash they find into your stomach. And there's the Yule Cat, who will eat you if you don't get any clothes for Christmas. The only winter monster I know that I don't want to mention myself is a certain ice-hearted cannibal from the Algonquin culture in North America. Speaking its name is supposed to give it power and attract it to you, and it's a legend that has already been very distorted and dislocated by non-native people, which I'd like to avoid contributing to. But I'm wondering if there are any others from any continent that might help this a topic for the show. The ones I mentioned are all European guys who are foreign compared to my American view, and seem to be very localised and unknown outside the areas they came from. Like a lot of folkloric figures, it seems that they've got lessons behind them. Keep in good spirits, don't let the winter depression get the best of you, sings the Maricluid. Keep your house clean, keep the pests out, and prevent fire hazards. It'll help you stay healthy, says the Schnabel Pecton. You better keep yourself warm, and you better not make me help you with that, warns the Yule Cat. Are there any like them that have intrigued you? I haven't heard every episode yet of your show, so if you've already talked about this, I will not be surprised. But if not before now, why not? Or next winter, it's your show, so I won't mind waiting.
So, I mean, we don't really do folklore on the show. We mostly do first-person stories of encounters with the paranormal, but I would recommend checking out Luke Lore, because Luke does very specific episodes about this. His episodes over the years, like I was looking at Violent Night, Holy Night, Oops, All Christmas Monsters, Rap Battles with the Maricluid, or how do I say that?
Maricluid.
So I had, and you can get transcripts for all of Luke's show at his website, lukelore.com. So I had a look, and there's a lot of stuff. There's the Tontut, which I believe are from Lapland, or the Tontu. There's Mother Gryla. There is Yolopuki, which is like also from Lapland. There's Dead Moroz and Snegorotchka, which is also, I think that is sort of the Eastern, like Far Eastern Europe. There's a lot of stuff out there, basically. A lot of folklore creatures around winter that are outside what you might consider to be the usual. So, I would check out Luke Lore. It's a really great show. The episodes are anywhere from, like, usually 15 to 25 minutes. And Luke has done some really stellar research on this stuff. So, there's some really, really brilliant out there. And you can find Luke Lore streaming anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and obviously, the creature you don't want to mention, you can find lots of information about that in Chad Lewis and Kevin Lee Nelson's brilliant book about that particular subject.
Of course, yes, absolutely. That's a really good read.
Yes, I'm not afraid of the Wendigo.
So thanks to everyone who sent in your email. We love hearing from you guys. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com is a place to send your messages. We also try and pull where we can from Instagram, from YouTube. We have a lot more we'd want to get to, but again, we have a guest on this episode. So we're going to take a little break. You can go refill your drink. We're going to play some ads. You don't want to listen to that bullshit.
Have some cold lemon meringue.
Yes, have some cold lemon meringue as God and all his angels intended. And then we will be back with the one and only Ruth Roper Wild.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Welcome back. As we said before the break, we have a guest on this episode, and our guest is someone whose name will be familiar to our listeners because we have done not one but two episodes so far showcasing stories from her incredible collections of British ghost stories. She is the author of numerous volumes, including the Roadmap of British Ghosts and the fantastic series, well, they're all fantastic, but the series These Haunted Times. She is Ruth Roper Wild. Ruth, welcome to the Ghost Story Guys.
Hi, really great to be here. Thank you for having me.
No, it's an honor. I mean, I've listened to you on Mysteries and Monsters so much that I almost feel like I know you. So I had to remind myself when you came on that no, I don't. I've never actually met this person, so don't don't give her maybe the full force of your personality right away.
I speak to Ruth more than my mum, I think.
Your mum will be asking for a rolling pin.
And Ruth, we were just saying off air that, of course, I was just saying how much I love your books, and genuinely I do. I love telling ghost stories. I've been doing it. I'm doing this show now for 7 years. I've been doing it full time for three. So I love telling ghost stories. But one of my frustrations is so much material that's in the ghost realm is kind of tired cliche stuff. You know, it's people who just will repeat a legend. You know, one of my most disliked phrases when I read a ghost book is many say, or some say. And I always think, well, who's many? Who's some? And of course, you've got this wonderful collection of books, which are first-person accounts from people with significant historical research. They tell people's stories. They eschew legends and nonsense. And I think really shed a light on a lot of aspects of ghost lore that kind of get passed over in favor of stuff that fits easily into, you know, it was a little Victorian boy, or it was a this, you know? They're just such fantastic resources. So just thank you for those existing at all.
Oh, well, thank you for enjoying them. It's really nice to hear when somebody's actually enjoying it. As an author, you kind of sit in a void doing all this work, and then you push it out. And of course, you don't get to see your readers reading them. Unless people leave reviews, that's the last you kind of hear on the subject.
Oh, yeah. That's how I ended up podcasting, to be honest with you. I mean, the feedback loop is so much shorter with podcasting. I put out a show, comes out on Tuesday. Yeah. People either love it or they tell you you're garbage, but you get feedback fast. And you were saying, you mentioned this on your most recent appearance on Mysteries and Monsters, and we were talking about it off air. You actually wrote two whole books last year.
Yeah, it was a complete mistake. I didn't mean to. I started out with two databases full of material when I wrote my first book. And I genuinely, foolishly, thought I'd write a book and that would empty the databases and that would be that. But what I actually discovered was that when you go out and start interviewing people and researching and asking people for their stories, they come back and say, no, I've never seen a ghost on that road or in that house, but I've got one at my place of work or in my pub or wherever. And all of a sudden you've got another six locations to start researching. So it just starts snowballing. And that had happened when I finished the Roadmap of British Ghosts Volume 2. I had a quick look at the databases and thought, the main ghost database has filled back up, so I'll put out another These Haunted Times, empty it again. So I started writing These Haunted Times Volume 3, intending that to be, you know, that book for the year, because it takes me about a year to write each book. And I was merrily typing away and researching and really getting into it like you do. And at about May, early June time, my computer very rudely, I thought, suddenly said, you have reached the word limit for Google Docs. What? I didn't even know it had a word.
Nope, neither did I. That is news.
About 700,000 words, Mark.
Holy man.
I can't publish a book with 700,000 words. Nobody'd ever be able to afford to buy it. And they'd have to have a shopping trolley to carry it around in. So I thought, I'll just switch it into two books. It'll be fine. Just carry on. And then I realised, well, I'm going to have to split it into two books now in order to reduce the word count on each half and be able to keep working on it. And then as soon as I did that, I thought, well, now you've got a problem, because now you don't know whether you've got strong stories in both halves or weaker stories in one half and stronger in the other. And you want both books to be equal. And, and now I don't know whether I've got all in one town in one book and some in another book, and whether I've got an even spread across the country in both. So I had to create three new databases, or I amalgamated into one when I thought about it more sensibly with colour coding. And I had to have three colour codings to work out whether it's strong story, what part of the country it was in, which book it was going in. And then I had to work on that for the rest of the year as I typed both halves. And it just all got a bit mad.
I am in awe of just the... I believe it. I'm in awe of the logistical wizardry going on here, Ruth. That is just an incredible amount of organization. I struggle just to keep this show organized. Never mind two separate books and three color-coded databases. That's madness.
Madness is the word you're looking for, not wizardry.
I'm really curious, Ruth. I through the journey of your having written these books, you know, again, it's eight volumes now in total, right?
Yep.
How has your outlook on ghost stories changed, or has it changed? You've gone through so many at this point. You must have seen every angle of so many different kinds of phenomena. I'm just wondering, has it altered the way you perceive the paranormal?
It has a little bit, if I'm honest, in two distinct ways. So the first is, obviously, I was lucky enough to be able to take partial early retirement back in 2016, which is when I first started writing the books. You know, and that gave me the spare time to be able to write the books, but it also gave me the spare time to do more actual go out ghost hunting, which I do quite a bit of whenever I can as well. So one of the things that it changed my perception on was, I really do now strongly believe in that adage that the more you look at the paranormal, the more it will look back at you. And it's, you know, to me, the amount of activity I can see when I'm out ghost hunting has definitely ramped up. And I don't think that's anything, you know, mysterious or woo-woo or anything like that. I think it's a genuine, you know, like if your hobby was being a fisherman and you had to learn how to stalk where the fish you were wanting to catch were in a river and what bait to use and how to cast the rod properly, that takes time and it takes honing your skills, doesn't it? And I think hunting the paranormal is simple. The more you do it, the more you learn to tune into what it's worth spending your time on or not spending your time on, and how to still yourself and look properly rather than be distracted by everything else that's going on, you know, in life and the world around you, but to actually stop and listen. So I think it's just a matter of self-training, but I think it does mean that you see more of it. And the other way it's changed, I had a kind of perception before that if you did enough research, you would find the answer, or you'd be able to put enough data together for somebody to find the answer. And what I'm suspecting more and more and more, the more data I gather, is there is not just one answer. I don't think there's going to be a one-size-fits-all. I mean, even if you just take one type of phenomenon, you know, I tend to mainly boast, you know, based the books on ghosts. I do have a few other bits of cryptid type things in there, and some strange lights, strange myths, that kind of thing that wouldn't necessarily class as a ghost. I definitely think that I've kind of broadened my view on, I think there's many more types of phenomena happening than I originally thought. So yeah, it has definitely changed my view a little bit.
Yeah, you've got one story where two women saw a man who walked into a room and disappeared. But he, when they reviewed the footage that from the security cameras, they saw them reacting to him, but not him, correct?
Yeah. And again, you know, you get ones the other way around where they didn't see what was happening, but the camera picked it up. So you get it both ways around. Yeah. You know, I've got other stories where somebody doesn't notice what happened, but yet when they review their footage, like, say, you know, bar stuff with CCTV footage, they can see things happening on the bar behind them that they didn't notice at the time. So, yeah, both ways round. But sometimes the people will see it, but the electronics won't. And sometimes the electronics will see it, but the people won't. Now, is that the same phenomena, or is it two different explanations? Who knows?
I mean, one of my favourite ones we spoke about, Ruth, is those, I think there was four people in that car. And they saw something cross the road in front of them. Two saw it, two didn't, because one of them screamed and that alerted everybody else to what had gone on. And that's one of my favourites, because that, once again, falls into that train of thought that I've got in regards to some of this, that why do we always get these reports of where there's a big group of people and only two or three of them have a strange experience and nobody else sees it, even though they're all in the same area? It's one of those things, is it down to brain waves? Is it down to blood type? Is it down to your star sign? These little foibles that when you get these stories, that's what makes them more fascinating, I think.
I've even got one where there's two cars approaching each other on the same bit of road, and each of them suddenly brakes and swerves to a stop, and the drivers get out and speak. And both of them saw a lady step out into the road pushing a pram at the same time, so they both stopped and swerved and stopped. But when they worked it out, each of them saw the lady step out from their side of the road, which means that one car saw her on the left-hand side and one car saw her on the right-hand side. So simultaneously, this apparition stepped out from both sides of the road so that it was in front of both cars simultaneously. Because the cars were in different carriageways. How to explain that? They saw the same thing, and yet the thing they saw was in effect, two mirror images of the same thing. I don't know where you go with that kind of thing. All I know is that that's what happened. And I do see it as kind of my role to not question the veracity of my witnesses. I've got no way of proving whether people are telling me the truth or not. I wasn't there. And, you know, if you've got a really good liar in front of you, but I've got no reason to assume people are lying, because I don't use people's real names in my books unless they specifically ask me to, which probably happens in about 1 out of every 100.
Oh, wow.
So 99%, I would guess, of my witnesses are all pseudonyms, which means they're not getting any credit for it. They're not getting any notoriety for it. They're not getting courted by the media or anything like that. They are literally gaining nothing for it other than talking to me and then being able to buy it themselves and see it in a book and show their friend if they wanted to, sort of thing. But, you know, I do that to protect their identity, because a lot of them are talking about their own private homes or the places they work. And the last thing you want is hordes of people knocking on your door at 12 o'clock in the night saying, can I see you again? You know, so to my mind, why on earth would they bother lying when it's literally gaining them nothing? So, yeah, so you're left with the veracity of that story is, you know, and the one that you mentioned, Paul, you know, in that particular one, two of them screamed. So the driver braked sharply and stopped and like, did you see it? And he was like, no, what? Why the brake? Why the brake? Because you screamed. Not because I saw anything. And yeah, two of them saw something and two of them didn't. Yeah, absolutely bizarre. And what is that? Is that the same case of, you know, I've actually sat quietly in a field once and watched two ladies walking their dogs. And they walked within 5 feet of a hare, you know, which is an indigenous British mammal, but they're quite shy. You don't see them very often, but they're quite big. They're quite a bit bigger than a rabbit. And they walked within 10 feet of it, and neither of them saw it, even though their dogs reacted to it. And you sort of think, is that what sometimes happens with the paranormal? That it's just that they're not paying attention at the right moment, so their brain doesn't switch on to it and go, oh, look, there's a hare in the hedge that I'm walking past. But their brain goes, it's much more important that I worry what my feet are doing and what companion is saying than worrying about that stupid animal sitting in the hedge, so I'm just not going to register it. Is that a function of the human brain, that it kind of filters out, well, that's extraneous information, I don't need it right now? I don't know. You could go down so many, pardon the puns, rabbit holes thinking about
hair
this.
Holes.
I think you make a really great point, and I think that is a great answer to people who say, well, you know, we live in an era of cell phone cameras. Why are there not more ghost sightings? And I think a really solid counter to that is, well, no one's paying attention.
If you spoke to my husband, the number of times in our village that he's been driving one way and I've been driving the other, and he's waved and flashed his lights at me, and I have failed utterly to notice him. But the other thing, you know, I get particularly cross with that, why don't we get more pictures because everybody carries cell phones these days, argument. I get quite cross with it, because I don't know about you, but I carry my phone everywhere with me, and I have my dog, and he and I go out every day, and he comes ghost hunting and everything. But on an ordinary walk, I love to take pictures of my dog. So you can bet that that phone is close to my hand, and I'm even thinking about, well, I need to turn the camera on it to take a picture of him. And yet, I never manage to capture the shots of him doing something funny unless I set the shot up. Because, of course, the moment something happens in real life, the amount of time it takes you to fumble your phone out of your pocket whilst trying to look at what's going on, and then try and turn it to on, first of all, I mean, mine's a fingerprint to turn it on, so trying to get your finger in the right place while you're kind of panicking, and then try and get the camera app to open, because you can bet your bottom dollar that your finger misses the camera app, and I open, like, the Messenger app first or something. And by the time you've flustered yourself out of that, whatever it was that was going on has long gone. So, no, I generally don't think that's a good argument for why we don't get so many pictures yet. Because you would have to literally walk around with your camera poised and ready to go, click when something weird happened, because the whole point of most of the stories I get is that the people weren't out looking for the paranormal. They were busy cooking their tea. They were putting their kids to bed. They were on their way to work. They were cooking at work. They were closing up the office after work. They were going shopping. They were coming home from the nightclub. They weren't out ghost hunting. So they weren't carrying a camera or their phone ready to take pictures. And whatever happens is normally very fleeting. You know, I can't think of many, in fact, I can't think of any off the top of my head, cases where whatever happened happened for longer than a few seconds at a time. So you've only got those few seconds to actually react and do something in. And none of us are that good at adapting fast, particularly when, with the paranormal, most people that I speak to, and I'm guilty of it as well, when it suddenly jumps out in front of you and you're not expecting it, you just haven't got the presence of mind for a minute because your whole brain is going, what the hell is that? And it isn't thinking, oh, I must logically get my camera out and I must record this because everybody will want to see it. Your brain just goes, huh?
I've experienced this. When I first started writing my book, A Strange Little Place, I saw a shadow person. I didn't even know such things existed. I didn't know much about the paranormal. I was just looking for ghost stories. But I woke up one morning and there was a shadow person standing over me in bed. But when it happened, and I saw them once or two or three other times on either side of that, but it's so against what you know of the world. You're not thinking, boy, I want my phone. You're thinking, what the hell am I looking at? I can't be seeing this. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It's literally as if your brain goes off, you just go offline for a minute. And by the time you get your brain to come back online and deal with what's happening has happened.
Yeah. The amount of times I've tried to take, because we've got tons of foxes around where we live. And unless you see them, Ruth, nobody would believe you. Because I've tried so many times and all I get is blurry shapes dashing about. And they'll sit there for ages. And as soon as you get your camera out, they're off. And I get like the end of a tail or just a blur. Yeah. You're like, well, it could be anything. So, and that's me seeing something and thinking, right, let me try and take a picture of this. And even that doesn't work. So like you say, if I've got some kind of strange image in front of me appearing, the last thing you're going to be thinking is, right, where's my phone? You'd be like, right, I'm off.
Dude, yeah. I was sitting at a railroad crossing last night trying to take a picture of a train for 20 minutes while this thing crossed in front of me. I did not get a single in-focus picture of a train. Just kept going by, got nothing. They are not subtle. And yet I have, you know, a million pictures of train squatch. Just this blurry thing in the middle of my screen.
And the one time I did have the presence of mind to take photographs when something was actually happening, I couldn't see it, but my dog clearly could. All I've got is some nice pictures of my dog sitting there because the camera didn't pick it up, only the dog did. So, again, even when you do, you know, you've actually got your camera with you and you're actually out ghost hunting and something actually happens, that doesn't mean to say the camera's going to pick it up anyway.
Yeah, and so, then you get back to the age-old problem of photographic evidence isn't really evidence, because even before the advent of AI imagery, you know, Photoshop and photo manipulation has been a thing for a long time. And I don't know what purpose photo evidence serves anymore, you know, because I don't think it convinces anybody. Again, I believe in the paranormal. I've seen it. But I look at most photos and I think, that's nonsense, you know. So I just don't, there's almost no point to trying to capture it, because who the hell is going to believe you?
And I've got a photograph of my own that I put out on Twitter a few years back when I was on Roadmap, the first volume. And what I tend to do is, if I'm going somewhere anyway, I tend to try and incorporate one of the roads that I've written about and just take a picture and post it on Twitter, you know, a bit of marketing, or, you know, keep the feed alive. And I was on the Isle of Wight, and so I made a specific trip to this particular bend in a road next to an old church that was haunted, you know, and I'd written about it. And I took a picture, nice sunny day, took a picture, and I wrote, I can't quite remember how I phrased it on the Twitter, because you've only got so many words on Twitter, haven't you, or X as it is now. And I wrote something like, the haunted, or the road at such and such a place where the ghost is. And I can't quite remember how I phrased it, but when I read it back after this blew up, as I'll explain, I realised that it was written ambiguously, and you could read it that I was saying I was taking a picture of the ghost. But that wasn't what I meant, but you could read it that way because there wasn't a comma or something. So what actually happened is I posted this innocent picture and people started firing me back on Twitter. Oh, yes, I can see the ghost. So I'm sort of thinking, oh, have I inadvertently caught the ghost on this picture? So the first one that said it, I wrote back and said, well, where in the picture are you looking? So they sent me back the picture with a little red circle drawn round where they had seen it. Anyway, this went on all morning. And by the end of that day, I had got that picture back from so many people with little red circles. The entire picture was covered in little red circles because everybody... in a different part, and it was all pareidolia. You know, if you blew that little corner of the picture up and looked at the pattern of the leaves a bit oddly, you could sort of see something. But it was all just pareidolia. And that just goes, so even when it's a genuine photo that has nothing in it, people will see something if they want to, or if they think they're supposed to. But yes, absolutely, you can manipulate photos so easily now. I mean, I have a Google Pixel phone, and you can literally take people out of the picture. You know, you can take a picture of a crowded pub and you can take everybody in the background out so it looks like you're sitting alone in the pub with just one click of a button now. So you really can't trust pictures, like you say.
Well, people have been faking ghost photos for 150 years. You know, you only have to go back to, is it William Mumner?
Yeah.
In the 1870s, who was a famous spirit photographer who ended up going to court and Barnum was after him and all sorts. So it's been going on as long as people have been taking photos with cameras. People have been faking them.
And look on the bright side, at least they've stopped faking photos. That's something we can all be back.
I don't know, Ruth. I mean, someone on YouTube just got busted for doing fake table knocking. So I feel like we've just started right back at zero. So ectoplasm is coming again.
Fairies next.
In your studies, has there been one area of the UK that has sort of emerged as maybe more densely haunted than the others? Or has it sort of been your experience that it's pretty evenly distributed?
I definitely get pockets around the UK. And I've never been able to work out whether, is it that it's more haunted or is it that the people there are more predisposed to talking about the paranormal? And more willing to talk to strangers. So, funny enough, I was researching at the moment, and I'm doing the tedious bit where I go back through all the sites where I'd asked for information, and I'm posting to them that the books are now published, and that where their particular town, village, whatever, where to look for it, so they don't have to go, you know, buy loads of books. They can just look at the particular one they want. And but it means going back through loads and loads and loads, well, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Of media sites. And whilst I'm doing that, I might as well kill two birds with one stone. And I also search the site back to the time I last searched it for any new ghost stories that have been spoken about on it. And funny enough, yesterday I was doing Telford and Wellingborough. And both of those, one's in Staffordshire, one's in Northamptonshire. And both of those, I frankly was getting bored after a while. With how many stories of ghosts people were talking about on them. So is that because they're really, really haunted places? Or is that because people enjoy talking about ghosts in that place? I don't really know what the answer to that is, because there's some places that just won't answer no matter what. And there's some areas of the country that you can pretty much guarantee that all I'll get is a load of wisecrack jokes back. So I never really know whether it's kind of a cultural thing or whether there's an actual difference in the paranormal occurring in those areas. But yeah, Wellingborough, the place is alive with ghosts, and so is Telford.
I know that's something that we kind of run up against sometime on the show, because we try to do different shows kind of themed around different topics. And we've done, you know, a few international episodes. Sort of in the old days, we did The Haunting of France. We've done The Haunting of Vietnam. I think we've done one or two Ireland shows, but... You know, people will often say, well, don't you think it's telling that there's only really English language speaking places that have ghost stories? And it's obviously, I mean, it's a huge display of ignorance, because that's not the case. It's just that that's the language we speak. So those are the forums we can look at. There are no doubt repositories of these stories in French and Arabic and, you know, Thai and all these things. We just don't have the ability to search them, and they're not part of like the Western sort of cultural pool, but I'm sure they're out there. But as you say, it depends on who's talking about them and who lets you into those spaces.
Yeah. I mean, I think I also like a ghost story from, I can't remember now whether it was Iceland or Sweden. I've had one from Germany. I've had one from South Africa. So, sometimes when like we do, we put ourselves out there as people dealing with the paranormal, don't we? And sometimes that will get somebody who doesn't speak your language as a first language will, come back to you because they happen to, I think with all of those, they happen to be married to an English person. So they had English as a good, strong second language, which is how they came to hear my stuff, if you know what I mean, or read my stuff. And, were happy to join in and tell me some of their stories from either their homeland or where they'd lived for a while. The German one was actually from somebody who was stationed out there with the army for a while. So you do sometimes pick up these pockets from other language areas. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I wouldn't be able to research Japanese material, say, or Chinese or Russian or anything, because I don't speak any of those languages. So that, that closes it off, unless they happen to be translated somewhere. But again, that's only as good as the translator, and B, only as good as your search engine, isn't it? Which is going to limit how much you can do in an area. And nobody's going to pay me to go and take photographs on this road either.
To that end, are you looking at going any further afield for your next volumes? Are you looking at, have you considered, say, North America or other parts of, say, mainland Europe? Or are you sort of thinking, no, I'm UK is kind of where I'm sticking?
I've got a bit of a hankering, I have to admit, to look into America a bit more. Simply because, because I do listen to some podcasts and, particularly when I'm doing housework or something, and there do seem to be a lot of good stories coming out of America. And that kind of sparks your interest a little bit. So I am sort of kind of toying with the idea. Plus, I accidentally, and this was another reason that made me think of it, there are some places in Australia, certainly, and I know in America too, that have the same name as places in the UK. And whilst looking for the media sites of the place in the UK, I inadvertently got onto either the American or the Australian one without realising, and started asking them about their ghost down Church Road or whatever in this village. I got people responding saying, we haven't got a Church Road. Are you sure you're in the right town? I thought, yeah, this is, whatever town in. No, we're talking about the UK. We're in Australia or America. And it made me think, well, actually, that's how easy it could be to get onto social media, which is how I do my research. I go out on social media and then get people to talk to me. And then I correspond with them either by phone or email or whatever's convenient. Or if they're close enough, I even go and meet them. But, it would be feasible to actually research somewhere like America, doing it that way and do it all by correspondence. So, yeah, I've got a bit of a hankering. But it just means starting with a whole new database. Oh,
no. Yeah, I'm like that. I think, what am I doing to myself? I shouldn't do this, but I can't not do this. And then another project has started and I have even less time to stare out the window or whatever it is I do with my spare time.
When they do my gravestone, it's going to say on it, she drowned under the weight of her databases.
If you got to go, what a way to go, right?
I know.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Ruth, because one of the strangest conversations I ever had was with a gentleman called Tom Reed, who is a very famous abductee UFO case from the late 60s. And he lives in Massachusetts, in Berkshire County, strangely enough. But when I was speaking to him, he was amazed because he lived in Hillsborough County. And obviously Hillsborough is a suburb of Sheffield. And down the road from where he lived is the village of Sheffield. And there's also a village called Stocksbridge. And there's also a Doncaster there. And he was amazed. He couldn't get his head round that he was speaking to somebody from Sheffield in the UK, where all these little towns and villages where he lived were all named after towns and villages round where I lived. And he thought it was crazy. And I said, well, clearly, when the people came over there, they were obviously from this area.
Yeah, they must have been, yeah. And then I fancy having Stocksbridge in there with the haunted bypass there.
Yeah. they've ramped it up. They've got a UFO instead. But then again, there's tons of UFO sightings over that neck of the woods as well. So, you know, strange sights of the Peak District. So it's weird how these things sometimes mirror each other, Ruth.
There's a bit of synchronicity going on there as well, with, you know, a ghost hunter from Sheffield speaking to somebody from Massachusetts who lives in an area of Sheffield, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Ruth, if our audience wanted to get in touch with you and share stories from the UK, what would be the best way for them to do that?
The easiest way is either email me, and it's very simple because my email is just ruthroperwild, with no spaces, dashes, dots or anything, ruthroperwild@gmail.com. Or otherwise, just look it up on Facebook or look it up on the Twitter and get to me via them is fine as well. And yeah, I'm more than happy to hear from people about your stories and what have you. I am endlessly fascinated, so please, yeah, do get in touch.
All right, well, yeah, folks, again, if you are based in the UK or even, you know, in the US or Australia, you want to share some stories with Ruth, we will put a link to her social media in the show notes. You'll, of course, find a link to all of Ruth's books, her Amazon stories, so you can pick them up. You can, of course, read them on Kindle Unlimited, but, you know, you can also buy hard copies, which we recommend you do. And, yeah, again, Ruth, I want to say how much we appreciate you taking the time to be here. And again, just how valuable I think what you're doing is. Like, I think it's truly like a once in a generation kind of project. It's a monumental undertaking. And I am, for one, again, I'm very, very deeply appreciative of what you've done.
Oh, that's really nice to hear, Brennan. Thank you ever so much. And it's a real pleasure to come on and talk to you guys. So anytime.
Welcome back. Thanks again to Ruth Roper Wild for hanging out with us. Don't forget, you'll find links to all of her stuff in the show notes. You'll find links to her social media, where you can buy her books on Amazon. Again, she publishes herself through Kindle Direct, so I think they're only available currently on Amazon, to the best of my knowledge. But you can read them through Kindle Unlimited, or you can buy paper copies, whichever you like. And again, you'll find links in the show notes. And man, she's an inspiration. She genuinely is an inspiration.
And lovely with it.
Absolutely. No, just a cool person all around.
Yeah, that's what working in local government does for you.
This has not been my experience, so she is truly exceptional.
But yeah, they are, for me, I think they are essential collections of modern ghost stories in the British Isles. I think she's clearly into the thousands of reports now.
Oh, easily.
It would be interesting to, and that's, you know, that's going on the ones she's published, as she showed us. And off air, she was giving us a preview of the logs that she's got, and there's hundreds of them that she's never got to. So, yeah, you've got to be saying several thousand now, which is phenomenal, but would have been lost.
That's it. I genuinely think the cultural importance of what she's doing can't be overstated.
100%.
All right, so again, if you want to get in touch, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is the way to do it. We always try to incorporate as many messages as possible in the mail segment of the show. These shows are getting longer, and that's because we have all these cool people we're getting an opportunity to talk to. The movie review stuff is kind of, I think it's going to be fun. But again, it's the soul of Talk Spooky, really the soul of the Ghost Story Guys, is your email. So please don't stop sending that. ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. Again, we're also on Instagram as The Ghost Story Guys, and we're on Facebook as The Ghost Story Guys, and we have a group called The Ghost Story Guys, finally made a group. Paul, my friend, where can everyone find you online?
You can find Mysteries and Monsters across most social media platforms and any podcast sites that do such things in this modern era.
Fantastic. I'm Largely the Truth on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd. You can find my other show, Weird Together, and that is available everywhere. Find podcasts live. All right. We'd like to end Talk Spooky with a featured musical guest. And it works out because this episode, we have spoken to a UK-based author, and now we have a UK-based musical guest. That guest is The Herds, with their song Half Light. You'll find links to all their stuff in the show notes. They're at herds-uk.bandcamp.com or at herds.band. That's herds.band. If you like what you hear, make sure to go find them and listen to more of their stuff. All right, folks. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We'll see you next week for episode 184. And until then, we will leave you with the Herds and Half-Light.
It's